Hello, everyone.
Hi, Evan.
Hi, Evan.
Hello. And this was a bit difficult for me. I don't know why I was having a hard time figuring out what to say. I've been in the program for a long time. And I know about perfectionism and all the other stuff. I had a haircut the other day, and this morning I realized my stylist forgot to thin my hair, and I was almost panicking, and I go, okay, you know, there's worse problems in this world right now. I can live with this. So anyway, and more to be more grateful, actually I want to thank everybody in the meetings. Someone said we learn from each other, and I was trying to figure out what have I learned from each other, from you guys recently. A few weeks ago, I was in a really bad place, and I came to the meeting, and then I left 10 minutes later, because I was in pain. And next time I came, next week, a few members asked me how I was doing. They were worried about me, and I was totally surprised. First of all, that they could figure out that I was in pain, and then that they really worried about me. So that kind of stuck with me, I don't know why. And then the other day I was talking to another friend of mine from the program, and he mentioned the dread he felt in his family growing up and how he feels like they might just come and disrupt his life at any point. And I go, holy cow, that's how I feel. But that kind of surprised me in a way, because I didn't expect anybody else to feel the same. I know feelings are similar in dysfunctional families, and I found lots of similarities. But this dread, I thought that was mine, and nobody else felt that. So, and it was positive that I realized, you know, someone else is feeling the same thing. I don't have to be hiding from it in a way, because often what happens is I deny it. I'm feeling the dread, I'm dreading the dread, but I'm fighting the dread at the same time. Validating it, accepting it is, I guess, what I gained from this program. So, what should I talk about today? I guess I started talking about something already. So maybe where I came from, and I come from pain, from hurt, constant freezing in my family, drama, lack of appreciation, not just for who I am or who I was as a little kid, but for each other as family members. And also repeated situations in my life. Same situation, different people, different place, same outcome. Well, same pain. Something's wrong here, right? So that's what pretty much got me in recovery. So, and that's how recovery started. The pain, the hurt, and the panic that literally made no sense. I mean, it's one thing to feel pain and hurt and thinking, well, this hurts. Well, obviously it hurts. This is what happened. It's a breakup, whatever. And another thing to think, oh God, this hurts like hell. But knowing that, you know, it should hurt, but it shouldn't hurt that much. Anyway, about 10 years ago, I was following my ex-girlfriend. And not following, stalking, but we were together at a meeting, and she left. We were together for coffee, I don't know what we were doing, kind of broken up, and then She said she was going to an Al-Anon meeting because her new boyfriend was an addict, whatever he was. And I go, wow, that's the meeting I used to go 10 years ago. So I decided to go myself. And I opened the door and they go, hey, Evan, we haven't seen you in a while. What's happening? And I haven't missed a week since then, pretty much. And so I had to deal with those issues. I knew they were coming from my family. The pain, the hurt, the white elephants. So at meetings, I like to talk about recovery. I mean, I've talked about pain this, pain that, hurt that, and I still talk about pain and hurt. But I always like to give it a positive spin and talk about recovery. How is my recovery doing? What did I learn today? What's my progress in a way? And it's, you know, sometimes it's easier than others. So I have a sponsor. He lives in Tucson, Arizona, where my recovery started. And so he insists that the first thing that I have to do is to love myself. And that's the most important thing in recovery, to learn how to love myself. And I know that's important because growing up, I learned how not to love myself. Not only I learned how to not love myself, but I knew the reasons why I shouldn't love myself. My mom said this about how stupid I am, how ugly I am, how this, and I have proof, you know, I did this, I didn't do this right, I didn't do that right, I messed this up, I messed that up. So with all this proof in my hands, it's kind of hard to realize that I'm okay, that I'm not at fault. There's someone else in the room that's the problem here. The adult in the room, pretty much. My mom and my dad. So, beginning to respect and love myself, that's a journey. That's a long journey, just like other lessons in recovery. And that's coming slowly. That's coming slowly. And it's coming. And as everything else, it's a work in progress. And the important thing about it is once I start loving myself, I'd rather use the word accepting first, because that's, I think, very important. Then something else happens automatically. I begin to accept other people also for who they are. And that hasn't been easy either, because I was criticized so much. How dare they be who they want to be? It's always been about pointing the finger and trying to show to myself or to others how they're not what they should be. Somewhere in the Promises, it talks about recognizing and accepting the vastness of our emotions and our human fallibility. And I've heard so many times you learn from your mistakes. That was such a scary statement for me for such a long time. How is it possible to learn from it? I don't want to make mistakes. I'm not making mistakes. I will not accept my mistakes. But slowly I'm realizing that that's how I learn. Because if someone lets me do something and I don't do it well the first time, and they let me realize that I have a brain and it's okay to have a brain, then I'll figure out what I didn't do right and I'll correct it and I'll improve myself. So talking about perfection, that's partly what I'm learning, that I make mistakes, and that's how I learn, because I have a brain. I'm not stupid, as I heard growing up. So, loving myself and learning my skills, what I can do and what I cannot do. And these come slowly. Learning that I have a mind to use in my daily life. So slowly, loving myself, beginning to accept people around me, there's another huge obstacle in recovery. Learning to allow loving people in my life. Because if I don't like myself, how do they dare love me or like me? I mean, they have to hate me, right? If they hate me, then I admire them. If I love them, if they love me, something's wrong with you. You know, I put up this facade and this pseudo facade that I'm a great guy, but deep inside I know I'm nothing. So if you believe the facade, you're stupid, you're whatever you are, and so on. Of course, once I start accepting and loving myself, then the facade, I'm trying to do away with it in a way. And then I can allow loving and people in my life because those are the ones that are because those are the ones that are supportive. And those are the ones that I don't have to constantly fight with. And if I don't have to fight someone close to me, means I can use that energy to do something else, to better myself, to advance myself, and so on. Know that all those other things that happen in supportive relationships. Wow. Amazing stuff. Oops, I have to punch in my code, I guess. These are my cards. Okay. So, what's recovery again? I'm talking about recovery here. All these little things, and they seem endless sometimes. Recovery in the beginning is learning how to deal with all those triggers from the past that used to drag me into those pits, what I used to call. And it would take me days to get out of that. I would stay in a panic mode or whatever mode you want to call it for days before I realized that, holy cow, what was that? How did I get out of it? Recovery gives me the tools. I used to say it gives me the ropes to climb out of the pit. And the more recovery progresses, I would say, the easier it gets for me to climb out of the pit. I talked to my mom 2.5 weeks ago. I thought I dealt with her very well. George said, congratulations, you did fantastic. Well, 2.5 weeks later, I don't know what triggered it. It hit me on the head. That dread of the family came back. It took me 3 days to get out of that. And to realize, you know, I have a recovery, I have a self, and I can stand on my feet, and I can confront people, and I can deal, I can protect myself. And I said another magic word in there, confront. Wow. Okay. So, dealing with triggers is one of the skills that I learned slowly, and as recovery progresses, then triggers become shorter. I don't think they'll ever go away. I think they will always be there, but it's just my skill and ability to deal with them will improve the longer I am in recovery, which brings another question, which I'll get to. Recovery. Letting go. Wow. There's another huge phrase. Letting go. I do not let go. It's not funny. It's not funny. It's painful. It's painful. I do not let go. But slowly I'm beginning to get some clues of how I could possibly let go. If I start trusting myself and love myself and accept myself and believe in my abilities to surround me with loving and supportive people, then letting go, it seems, it becomes a little bit easier because it's less important to hold on to, because I begin to trust myself a little bit more. Now, this is just a hint, recovery hint from the future, maybe. I don't know. Not there yet, but I'm getting those hints. But letting go is important. And part of why letting go is important is, remember, a psychologist that I used to come to recovery meetings up in San Luis Obispo, she used to say, she was probably in her 70s, and she used to say, there was a point in my recovery when I realized that whatever happened to me happened, I'm over it, and I'm moving on right now, I'm leaving my parents behind, I worked it all out, and that kind of stuck with me because I didn't know. It signified a letting go. It's a letting go. And part of this letting go, it seems, it's an acceptance. An acceptance, I know some people don't like the word fate, but whether I like it or not, there are some things I have no control over in my life. Like where I was born, the parents I had, and the way they brought me up. Whether I like it or not, that's not going to change. That's there. And that will always be there. No matter how much recovery I have, that will always be there. And someone said, you know, you were just dealt a bad deck of cards. And, okay, how can you argue against that, right? There are some things I can't argue against. And so when I hear it was a matter of fate, luck, bad luck. If I weren't me, it'd be someone else in my life. If I wasn't born, there was another guy there, another kid was born, they'd probably be the ones suffering the same way I did, because that's who my parents were in their phase in their lives, and that's what they were expressing. Okay, now I have to accept that. Which means it's good to think about, because it means that at some point I may have to accept it, that that was just what happened. And which brings back the question, okay, I'm learning how to deal with my triggers and everything else that shows up in recovery, so now what? And brings to mind another saying that someone said also, that recovery is about getting a life. And, okay, getting a life. Fine. And getting a life. So, what does that mean? I mean, I know probably many of you are working hard on their recovery, on your recoveries, and I've been working hard on my recovery. So what does it mean to get a life? I'm going to leave it there for now. There's other things that I'm learning about recovery. And they keep popping up. I was going to start my speech with that, but about 10 years ago when I moved to San Luis Obispo, my neighbor was having a togo party. And excited. She was pretty. And I was new in town, so I'll be meeting lots of new people. So I was somewhere, I come home late, I was about half an hour late in a way. I had bought a sheet. I had bought the pen. And I don't know about the shoes, what my decision was. And it was right across the street, right? So I was an hour late. And I just couldn't find the guts to go. And I really wanted to go so much to that party. And I never went. And I knew it was stuff from my past that was just stopping me from going. And I found lots of excuses. I don't know whatever. I couldn't put the robe on, the sheet, shoe. I don't know whatever. But in the end, I didn't go. And I was beating myself up about it. I still think about that toga party. Anyway, so confrontation was another word. I guess by that I meant that there's things that come up and stop me and freeze me. And, you know, I have to accept it. That's the way it is. I can beat myself up or say, you know, such things will come up again, and I'll be disappointed in myself. But then, learning my human fallibility, I have to accept that, you know, I'm not the only one. Others, I'm sure, have felt that way before, and that's okay. And accepting myself allows me to freeze energy in me, because I don't have to fight things in me. Then I let go. Instead of fighting with myself, why I didn't go, why I'm not going, and so on, I just accept, you know, I can't go. Because I'm stuck inside, and I have so much fear, and so on, and that's okay. And then I stop fighting it, and I release all the energy. Recovery also is about another major aspect. That's been also really hard to learn, confrontation. I don't mean just screaming at people. I mean just standing up also is a scary phrase, because it can be very misconstrued. Learning how to support myself, let's put it in those terms, learning how to support myself in daily life so others don't run me over. That sounds good. Yeah, I think that's well put. And that's difficult, because if I use the word standing up or confront, I have no clue what to do. I know what I learned growing up. Anger and screaming and drama and so on. No. Recovery, I'm learning, I'm accepting slowly that it's about being political. I can't just go to someone and say, I want this from you. Can I? No. I have to just phrase it in some way. I cannot just say, scream at someone because I'm angry at them. Right? I always give the example of this old cartoon that stuck in my mind, when someone is either really angry or pissed off something, and they run up the mountain, there's a little house up there, and they scream their guts out in the house, the roof explodes, and they come out back down to the valley like nothing happened. And I go, wow, that seems more appropriate of a way of dealing with anger. They don't have, you know, I can deal with it myself, learn from it, and then come back down and address any issues that came up. So confrontation is very complicated, and I'm doing the best I can. It's a learning experience. These are things that I never learned. These are things that I'm experimenting. And every situation is different. Usually, every person is different, because we're all different personalities. Some people may require a little bit of this, others may require a little bit of that. And there may be times when I just say something rude or abrupt. You know, that's part of my humanity also. I have to accept that I can't be perfect. So And going back to other people, loving myself slowly brings acceptance of others. And acceptance of others for who they are, which means I can let them talk maybe a little bit more than interrupting them. I can listen to what some other person has to say. And lo and behold, they said something interesting. I can let them be and see how they cope with this situation. And then I may learn something from that, instead of trying to tell them how to do it, or try to interrupt them and do it my way, and so on and so on and so on. So accepting others means, oh wow, all right, I didn't think of that. That's a different way of doing it. Do I care if the person used different tools or they were slower than me? They might have been faster. They moved this item from here to there, and that was mine. Do I care? How important is it? If they move my stuff in the morning, my shoes, and I can't find them, I'm late at work. Well, there's something more important to talk about. So, discerning what's important and what's not important, that's a hugely difficult task also, because my ego wants satisfaction. I show them, in a way, this is mine, I'll do it this way, and if I said so, that's how it should be. Why aren't they paying attention to me? And lots of other meaningless, I would say, expressions about me that really don't respond to the task at hand or to the relationship in a way. But I'm getting into complicated issues here. I don't have answers. So, and that's my mind talking often, tries to figure out everything, but I can't. I have to be with my heart also. Okay. So, and the question, of course, of a higher power. That's another very difficult question. My higher power has been the meetings, the atmosphere in the meetings, and that was the easiest way for me to deal with it, because that was something I could respect. And if every now and then I had a meeting that wasn't very satisfying, it's okay. That was an exception, usually. There's this sacredness at the meetings. And originally I also realized, talking about having no control over some things, besides where I was born, my parents, I have no control over the time I was born. Right? You can't argue about that with me. No, you had control over the time, the year you were born. There's some things that take no argument, I think. So I will just drop here, and I will leave here. And I'm getting a bit spiritual right now, but I think that's part of the program. It's being spiritual. This segment of time that I'm placed here on earth. That's I have no control over the duration of the time when I was, and or the placement in the eons of the string of time. And that's bigger than me, whether I like it or not. And that's clearly said something bigger than me, and puts everything in perspective in a way. It's like, I don't know if you've ever looked at the stars through a telescope. I mean, when I look up in the sky, I see stars, right? And there's stars, and there's huge gaps of black, of nothingness. when you look at it through a telescope, holy cow, it's packed with stars. I mean, there's hardly any open space up there. And it's amazing. In a way, it puts things into perspective. And that's maybe where I come from, where I am right now when it comes to higher power and some more spiritual existence beyond me. And I left this for last. I did say I had a question, and recovery, big part of recovery is dealing with the triggers. And then lately I've been asking that myself, okay, because I've been quite obsessed. I'm quite an obsessive personality in many ways. So I've been obsessed about recovery. But then suddenly I go, okay, I'm recovering. I have these triggers I'm dealing with. 3 days lasted the panic with my mom and the dread. Wow, 3 days? That's nothing. I got out of it on my own. With the tools, of course. All right, so now what? What do I do with the rest of my life? Having a life is part, one of the goals of recovery. Get a life, they say. And I was, it's amazing that this puzzled me. And I said, well, you know, I guess I just have to live and enjoy life. That's it, maybe. I'm not sure about my answer, but that's probably what it is. That amongst and in between all my recovery, then I just live life and try to squeeze that word enjoy in there. Okay. Something to think about. Thanks.